It is my great pleasure to introduce to you our speaker, Susan Ferguson. We're really lucky this worked out. We had hoped that Susan and her partner, Chris Ferguson, could have spoken last Sunday on our Worldwide Communion. As it is, Chris is in Bogota, and they were supposed to have left, but things got delayed, so we have Susan with us. Susan holds a BA in German Literature and a Master's of Social Worker from the University of Washington. She emigrated to California to take a job with the YWCA in the inner city of Vancouver. That's where we met. We had a really great group of colleagues. I was working with First United Church. And one of the great things when Chris started to come and court Susan, he brought lots of pizza. I, by that time, was a resident of Susan's apartment, which I inherited after she moved out. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I had many happy years there by Mr. Benedetti's store. We're above it. In any case, Susan then became a world traveler with Chris. She first served as overseas personnel in Costa Rica from 1987 to 1991. Susan was coordinating medical and health promotion services at a large daycare for low-wage working mothers. She has a gift for languages and emerged fluently Spanish. Then in 2004, Susan and Chris were appointed once again as United Church of Canada overseas personnel to serve with the World Council of Churches based in Jerusalem. Susan was assigned to the Ecumenical Accompaniment Program in Palestine and Israel. Now, this is a World Council of Churches initiative to support efforts to end the occupation of Palestinian territories and to support a just peace in the Middle East. By the way, our church has sent, I believe now, 13 people who've each taken a time, 13 or 14, of spending 3 to 4 months, usually living in quite a remote village in the West Bank, giving heart and encouragement to local people and being their voice to the wider world. Now, Susan worked with the Ecumenical Accompaniment Team, and she also worked with the Department of Service to Palestinian Refugees of the Middle East Council of Churches, who've lived in camps now for some 4 generations. Then when Chris was reassigned to the United Nations to be the World Council of Churches United Nations Liaison Officer in New York City, Susan was reassigned to work with our United Churches Justice, Global, and Ecumenical Relations Unit. Now, we've just been renamed to Partners in Mission Unit, but nonetheless, it was known fondly as JAGR. And Susan provided leadership for 3 years as the United Church of Canada's Advisor on Refugees and Immigration, dealing with refugee issues and sponsorship concerns. And I hear you just... But your last phone call was from the United States, of all things, changing their minds and wanting to know if our United Church would take some Uyghurs from Guantanamo. So that was kind of gratifying. That was a long slog. I could say a lot more about Chris, but I won't because we have Susan here today. But only to say that Chris has been appointed to work with our United Church partners in Colombia. He'll be working with the Latin American Council of Churches. Susan will be working as an assistant to the Methodist Bishop. And the Methodist Church, I understand, is a small but rapidly growing church in Latin America, particularly with indigenous people who've been displaced by mining, you know, all kinds of other activities. And Susan doesn't quite know what she'll be doing yet, but she will be the bishop's assistant. So we're going to wish you well as you shift from the Middle East, which must be kind of a wrench, and back to where they speak Spanish, and you do too, fortunately. But Susan today is going to talk about, in the context of the Mission and Service Fund, she's going to talk to us about global ministry, Lynn was wonderful talking to us earlier about the opportunity to serve in Nepal, and Susan is yet another living letter from the Global Church. So welcome, Susan. The other thing is, we're going to have time for conversation with her over hummus and corn chips in the memorial room. So if you don't have to rush away for Thanksgiving dinner, please join in. That conversation will be more specifically around the latest in Palestine and Israel. Welcome, Susan.
Let us pray. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I'm, as Vicki said, very, very glad that this opportunity did work out at the last minute. Maybe at coffee hour I can recount the tiresome story of why we're not yet in Medellin. It has to do with clearances on religious worker visas, which are not so easy to come by. I know that Chris would really, really have wanted to be here and talk with you today, but he had to go down in any case for a long-planned key meeting in Bogota. I'll just say very, very briefly that one of the interesting things about that is that the program that he's going to be doing a lot of work with is not a copy of the Ecumenical Accompaniment Program for Palestine and Israel, but one that was, let's say, strongly inspired by it, in which the Colombian churches have come together to say that they want international accompaniment there. They want the global church to be much more present with them in the very, very difficult situation in Colombia. So we are happy to be invited. I have to say that we've been on what's called home assignment since January here in Canada, in a great many parts of Canada, and that's been really exclusively talking about our experiences in Israel-Palestine and the people that we worked with in Israel-Palestine using a very, very particular lens. It's both our great privilege and our responsibility to lift up for you the voices of Palestinian Christians, which are rather seldom heard in this situation of ongoing occupation and conflict. We're glad to know that later this fall you'll have an opportunity to be in a study group with Barbara Lloyd, which will be talking about a number of these themes, so I'm not going to talk a great deal about them right now, but just to say that our lens for looking at this situation comes from the Palestine Kairos Palestine document, and I can say more about how we approach that for people who are able to talk afterwards. The Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land with flowing streams and underground waters welling up in valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive trees and honey, a land where you may eat without scarcity, where you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron and from whose hills you may mine copper. You shall eat your fill and bless the Lord your God for the good land that has been given to you. This vivid passage describes the possibility of abundance for all. It's an especially good passage to look at on this Sunday when we both give thanks for the abundance that we enjoy and are also renewing our understanding of what it is that we're called to do with our abundance by participating in the Mission and Service Fund. Many of us do find a difficulty with the latter part of this passage, and indeed many passages in the Hebrew Bible that would seem to talk about those particular people who Moses was addressing having an exclusive claim to that land. I'd like to return to that difficulty at the end of my remarks. But I'm very glad, as I know Lynn was, to be able to talk about this bearing in mind the what I call the M&S lens, which is to say the philosophy that We do not, as individuals, decide exactly where we are going to put our resources and with whom we are going to ally. We do that as part of a church. We have processes of dealing with our partners and having conversations with them, both in Canada and around the world, in order to decide how our abundance in the M&S fund is going to be used. I personally would never want to make that decision just as an individual. So the starting point of all this in talking about M&S is to say that we are part of all these endeavors that both overseas personnel and our partners in different places in the world are engaged in, and that they do in part by being able to draw on our M&S funds. We are a part of those things. We are standing in solidarity with those people. And we can, again, as Lynn said, we have much to learn from them, much to share with them. We are there with them. Now, to illustrate how this is played out, I would like to focus on the one particular place, on Israel-Palestine. This is a place that suffers and yearns for wholeness, the place that we were sent to as overseas personnel. If we look at how abundance and scarcity, how power and suffering pay out there, and if we look at the array of ways in which all of us can participate, have been participating in the work there, then we can see a potent illustration of how our participation in God's mission is played out. This is always what we were about, what we are called to. Some say that abundant living for all, as witnessed in that passage, is actually idealistic. It's pie in the sky, something that is a nice goal, but we can't get there. But there are actually real goals. There's hard work, and there are real goals, and there are measures of how far along the road we've gotten on those goals. As part of our United Church policies, we would say that some of the measures of those goals are that the occupation of Palestine would end, that Jerusalem would become a city open to all with its tremendous significance to all people of faith, that international law would be applied in the resolving of very difficult situations of injustice, that nonviolent solutions are the way forward, that military solutions are not solutions at all, that the early splendid vision of Israel as a state which can be a welcoming and inclusive place is attainable. Certainly our Israeli partners there yearn for that to happen. When we talk about abundance and we apply the idea and the ideal of that to Israel and Palestine, you could not really do better than the example of people's farming, rural farming, and the olive harvest, because this includes all the elements of abundance. It includes, I could go on at some length about the time that I and Vicky and other people have spent in small rural communities with the wonderful welcome of people there, with their generosity in sharing what they have, with their closeness to the land, with the way in which, without exaggeration, they consider their olive groves and their particular trees as parts of their family going back many, many generations. This is an example of God's abundance fully used and available for all and available to be shared. But just as in Moses' time, just as in the time of Jesus, that abundance, that possibility of abundance, doesn't come through in reality. This is an example of how the sharing of abundance that's completely possible in that place, all through Israel and Palestine, isn't realized, is prevented by happening by the actions of human beings. Many of you will know that there is less and less land available to people for cultivation because they're prohibited from accessing it, or it's taken over for settlements. More and more olive trees are destroyed. I get periodic things. And just last week alone, over 600 trees were deliberately destroyed and burned in one area of the West Bank, just to make sure that they were destroyed. Groves need careful tending, and they don't yield well if they're not tended, and many, many farmers are prevented from accessing their land on a regular basis. As I alluded to with Nicholas, people have to get up early during harvest to work as fast as possible, and they work with the protection of Israeli peace activists and international observers in the many, many dangerous areas, especially those close to settlements. And the same morning that I was climbing up trees and shaking down olives and sharing breakfast, a few hours later, a man and his son not far from us were attacked by settlers, and the man was very, very badly wounded. This happens all the time. Still, the steadfastness of these people and their attachment to their land is still there. The sharing of work and food and rest is still there. And the vision of an even more perfect sharing is there. These people, who we work with so closely, in particularly in the accompaniment program, but in other ways as well, their voices are calling for a peaceful solution. They have a peaceful vision of what can happen in their land, and they want it to work. I had a number of other remarks that I wanted to focus on, particularly about Jerusalem, which I could maybe comment on later, but just to say that even much more so than when we were privileged to live there, these same things are being played out in urban settings. The old city and the areas around it are under very, very serious attack all the time. Many homes are being destroyed, many people displaced. People are very frequently forbidden entry to a city where they've traditionally gone back and forth for millennia. These things are coming to a certain crisis point, but there is still an eternal, unquenchable vision of the place that Jerusalem can have in this world. It's not a metaphorical sense of this, but in real terms. It's a tough, resilient, beautiful city where, until the British mandate after World War I, Jews, Muslims, and Christians mixed freely together, only later being artificially divided by whichever the current occupying power was. It's meant to be an open city. And as they say in Arabic, inshallah, if God wills, that will become a reality. When we speak of our commitment to the Mission and Service Fund, we're talking about our proper place in the many challenging contexts of this world. This is particularly hard to discern in a situation as complicated as the Middle East, if you were just an individual looking to see how you might participate in that. We know as Christians we're called to resist oppression, to stand with the oppressed, work towards a fulfillment of God's vision of abundant life. Well, the good news is that this call to act and serve isn't for us as individuals, and it's not ours to name and control. It's God's mission for the world that we share in. And one of the ways in which we express that is in the Mission and Service Fund. In many circumstances, and I would wager probably in the ones that Lynn worked in, our emphasis, particularly overseas, is to work ecumenically, increasingly these days in interfaith situations. And nowhere is this more crucial, nowhere more essential than in Israel-Palestine. The United Church has many specific important policies about Israel-Palestine, but through the Mission and Service Fund, all of us also directly support initiatives that forward these policies. I want to give one very short example and then say a little bit more about the Ecumenical Accompaniment Program. The UCC strongly supported the formation of something called the Jerusalem Interchurch Center. And without going into great detail, in a situation of conflict such as it exists there, and frankly, the same kind of thing applies to Colombian churches, it is very often the case that the churches find it difficult to work together. they're too taken up with their own problems. Their funding comes from outside, and they relate to other places rather than to each other. In Israel-Palestine, the splendid work that's been done around bringing together the 13 historic churches and other faith groups has resulted in something that's been acknowledged around the world as an extremely important advance, which is expressed in the Kairos Palestine document, Palestinian Christians speaking as one about their situation. That document, although much attacked, especially by Israel, has contributed now to similar efforts being carried out by Muslim theologians and laypersons there, and great interest in it and great discussion by Jewish theologians in Israel. This all goes to build up a positive vision, a possibility of hope where, as they say in their document, there is no objective hope. As Palestinian society increases in its nonviolent resistance to occupation, these efforts, these drawing together of people from very different religious traditions, are extremely important. Secondly, Vicky has told you a little bit about the Ecumenical Accompaniment Program that provides presence, solidarity, human rights monitoring, and real friendship in Palestinian populations that are at risk, and for Israeli peace groups, which, while not necessarily physically at risk, are always under attack. It's now about 18 countries that are participating, and I think with the latest appointment, something like perhaps 16 United Church people have gone. I should say that the numbers of the accompaniers, while predominantly Christians, also include Muslims, Jews, Hindus, and people of no particular faith tradition. The newest countries participating are Ecuador and the Philippines, so that gives you an idea of the range. The United Church of Canada is fully committed to this program. It funds the basic costs of our accompaniers, and this is not an inexpensive proposition to go over there for 3 months. It funds their participation through the Mission and Service Fund, also providing training here and important conversations when they return, because this is a very difficult thing they're engaged in. Our staff person in this area, Patty Talbot, is the national coordinator for the Canadian churches of this program. And just, I would also ask that you keep her in your minds and hearts, because she's just going to be leaving for important meetings there. And there is an attempt for her to be able to go into Gaza to visit our partners there, something which we consider very, very important and for which we've received no permission since 2007. We have partners in Gaza who have been going through very, very difficult circumstances. And as I like to underline, facilities there that M&S dollars have gone to were destroyed in the CAS-led operations in 2008-2009, and there are attempts to rebuild. We're hoping that Patty will be able to talk with those people directly. Now, when I was the team support person for the Ecumenical Accompaniment Program, things were going a little bit differently in the West Bank. Ecumenical accompaniers were told to stay more in the background if there were any particular kind of demonstrations, that wasn't their role. But things are going at a faster pace there now. There are many, many nonviolent demonstrations all the time, and there's a lot of military pushback on that. As the nonviolent demonstrations increase and the numbers of house demolitions draw more protesters, as there are more reported shootings and attacks and arrests because of these nonviolent actions, our accompaniers are in increasingly difficult circumstances. And I want to say, although this may also sound pie in the sky, that I strongly believe that you are there with them. You are part of this solidarity effort with very vulnerable people, And you were part of that in great measure because you were part of the Mission and Service Fund effort. We have amazing, excellent United Church accompaniers there. And they are supported both financially and spiritually by the fact that they know that the United Church is with them. Responding to the call for God's vision of wholeness and abundance for all is real work done by real people that you are engaged in. I mentioned earlier that I wanted to return to a more difficult part of the Deuteronomy passage that has to do with the image of this land being given particularly to the people that Moses had led out of the wilderness. There are difficulties with this, and many people struggle to approach them in a good and concrete and useful way, with particularly with Jewish friends and confreres. Independent Jewish Voices is a Canadian organization that works for just peace in Israel and Palestine, works in common with many United Church groups across the country. A small example is an event that we did in North Vancouver that was jointly sponsored by St. Andrew's United Church, Independent Jewish Voices, and the Boat to Gaza. Independent Jewish Voices followed closely the reactions to the Kairos-Palestine document and the attacks on it as anti-Semitic, implicitly advocating the destruction of Israel because it called for a just resolution of the occupation. They crafted their own response to this document. Among other things, they addressed the responsibility of Jews to act for justice and the ways in which that is a question under dispute. Some of what they have to say in their formal document may sound familiar. Through its long history, Judaism, like Christianity, has included both those who promote justice and compassion and those who protect the powerful at the expense of justice and the less strong. One theologian describes those promoting justice and peace as Jews of conscience. His way of contrasting this is to label other people Constantinian Jews. IJV is committed to acting as Jews of conscience. Those of our members who are religiously inclined point to core religious values in the Torah which reflect this. For example, the injunction to not ill-treat any stranger, that is a non-Jew, or oppress him in any way, for you are always to remember that you were strangers. Another quote very fondly used from Zechariah says, "Execute truth, justice, and peace within your gates." This emphasizes that these three concepts are interlinked. When justice is done, truth is achieved, peace is established. Now, it's true that both Zionists and non-Zionists find succor in the prophetic texts, a phrase I like quite well. They find succor in these prophetic texts from both ways of going at it. Many would cite scripture to justify Israel's claim to all the land mentioned in the Bible and attempt to sanctify the expulsion of Palestinians and the occupation of their land. One Israeli rabbi says, "There are no Arab lands here. In its entire biblical borders, this belongs to Israel. This is the decision of divine politics, which no earthly politics can overcome." But Independent Jewish Voices says, "It is our view that all people have an ethical obligation to reject these expedient arguments. Instead, that we must dedicate ourselves to the pursuit of peace rooted in social justice and compassion." So, we are engaged in difficult tasks in many places in the world. We're in very good company, both in Israel-Palestine and here in Canada. And for that, and for God's abundance, we give thanks.